Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show any time of day or night, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil computer services. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Don't forget, we are moving to 101.1 FM, our new frequency, our new home, covering a larger portion of northern New Mexico. Later on in the show, Robert Knott will be here, speaking of the arts. Right now, I'm delighted to welcome award-winning author of poetry, fiction, and essays, Ana Castillo. Her latest novel is called The Guardians, published by Random House. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Good morning.
It's wonderful to have you here. I loved reading this book. And by the way, you'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore on San Francisco Street, right across from the Lenzic Theater. This is a story of people living in southern New Mexico near the border. What was the inspiration for the book? Was there a person or incident that sparked this story?
No, I think it actually was slowly moving into my system, into my subconscious, if you will. I moved back to New Mexico at the end of 2003. I was going back and forth to my new home there. As I was keeping up with the residency in Chicago at DePaul University. So my seasonal visits there, I began to feel the lifestyle, the way people live out there. It's a large farming community. You see the seasonal workers before you can get to my home. So little by little, I think the story started to creep up on me.
When you say you moved back to New Mexico, you're from Chicago area originally. Did you live here at one point?
Yes, I was here in the early 90s. I lived here for several years, and this was in Albuquerque, and that was where I wrote my novel, So Far From God, and I polished up my book of critical essays, Massacre of the Dreamers, so I was pretty productive. I did two books while I was there, and I was sort of looking for that place again, that niche for me. It works for me to be sort of withdrawn from, you know, the hubbub. And at that time, you could still say that about Albuquerque, that you're sort of away from, you know, big things. And I didn't come here by way of Chicago. I'd been away from Chicago for many years. I came here actually from living and teaching in California. So it turned out that I had to return back to Chicago for family reasons, stay there, and as I said, started teaching, but I was still longing to come back to New Mexico.
And so this time you chose southern New Mexico in an area, in the same general area as where this book is set, The Guardians.
Yes.
Which is a whole different world, the north and southern part of New Mexico.
Yes, indeed it is, and It's much more Mexican influence because it's close to the border. You do have some of the very old families. I live in a village that was established before the United States had taken over the area there, and so there's families there that have been there for many generations. I'm happy to say I'm included now in that family. They also are proud of their Native American mixture. You know, their great-great-grandfather went up and uncles and married Apache women. I fit very well in there, so I feel comfortable with that. The Spanish is not the northern New Mexican Spanish. It's not of the Hispanos. It's Mexican Spanish, or at least northern Mexican Spanish, which is still different from mine. My Spanish comes from my mother's side, who was from Mexico City, so I have a mixture of Spanish. Wherever I go, people aren't quite sure where I'm from, and I just kind of fit in there. So that's all. That all started to work itself into my system. You know, this whole history of farmers, and it's just absolutely splendid on the one hand, and also heartbreaking on the other hand, to see the workers, the seasonal workers that are brought out there. You have to go past onion fields, alfalfa, cotton. You know, there are cotton pickers today. We don't think about it. You know, we think that machines are doing all the work. Watching the onion pickers work at night. Now, they make a little bit more money working at night, and they have a miner's light so they can see. But you have to remember, there are very dangerous creatures, you know, crawling and roaming around at night that present even an added danger to the workers out there.
We're talking to Ana Castillo. The main character in your book is Regina, who is a wonderful character. It's a red-haired, middle-aged widow who has no idea how beautiful or funny she is. She's taking care of her teenage nephew, who's a very devout Catholic who wants to enter the church. And they're both looking for his father, her brother, who's gone missing while trying to cross the border from Mexico. The subject of immigration, illegal immigration, so-called, is handled with realism. And it struck me how much fiction can do that political rhetoric and that kind of talk really can't do when addressing a subject like this.
Well, I appreciate that statement because I do write in various genres. I started out as a poet. I have done critical essays. I've even gone and done some journalism. I wrote a political play and so on. I look for different genres for my concerns, my political concerns. And I do believe that storytelling is a very important way to get the message across, and perhaps to people who might not on the onset think that they are sympathetic to your view. In fiction, also with the storytelling, you're telling a human side of the story. It's not about statistics necessarily, or who's running for office type thing. We're talking about one family, their grief, their concerns, their struggles, and I hope by doing that, I can reach out and get people that would not normally be concerned about this issue.
It's very striking in that way because it goes to the heart without being didactic or moralistic. The other thing is the story tells us again in a way that only fiction can do about people who are very much ignored by society but are not themselves ignorant. And you touch on issues of pollution, poor infrastructure, racism, poverty, drugs, gangs, and yet it's all human. There's no clear good guys and bad guys.
Well, that's how people are. We are complex creatures. I'll tell you, as far as where I get that insight from, I myself am a brown-skinned woman with a lot of indigenous blood. I come from a humble background. I pursued my education, I've traveled around the world, I've written more than a dozen books, and yet I can walk into a Dillard's, let's say, in Albuquerque, or a store here in the plaza, and have security follow me around because there are assumptions about who I am just on, on my color, my skin color. I have a special insight to those people that I write about because we have assumptions about people when they are marginalized on the basis of color, gender, race, sexual preference, but they may know a whole lot more about you and about the world that we can imagine. And so that's why I know them so well, because I experience it even though I have traveled far and wide and come back to that experience.
We had Sherman Alexie on the radio recently, and he had written his most recent novel has one character going into the bodies of many different characters, a book called Flight. And I said, how did you know what it feels like to be all of those characters? He said, because all of them are me.
Exactly. Well, in my new novel, The Guardians Here, there's a quartet of narrators. It's this woman, Regina, that you said, Regina, who's a 50-plus-year-old widow. Well, that's not a far stretch for me, and I also live out in the desert and so forth. But her nephew also speaks in the first person, a 15-year-old boy, as you said, very spiritual, very devout Catholic. Then we have this Chicano, 35-year-old, cool guy, and comes from a different generation, and he has to tell his story. And
he's great. He's an activist, and he takes one look at Regina, and
boing, right. Thunderstruck, exactly. But she doesn't know it. And then he brings in his grandfather, who he's got a good relationship with, and the grandfather takes over, and he represents a historical voice there on the border. So in his time and place, he's got his way of speaking and the information that he wants to share about his generation. So he talks in his voice, and I have this past week of touring around since the book came out, everyone asks me the same question, and I have the same answer. Obviously, in all our novels, our characters, we've injected some of ourselves in there. Just like when you're dreaming and you say, "Got this, I dreamt about this person, I don't know who it is," and then my dead grandfather showed up, and now we were arguing. Well, all of those characters, of course, are you. You're having it out with yourself, and that's what we do when we're writers. In addition to that, why they're so familiar is because we do composites of people that we've all met in that ambiance. And so people ask me, "Is that grandfather my grandfather? Did you meet him on the border, or is he your grandfather?" And they're just convinced that he's someone that I went and took a tape recorder with and spoke with. But he's actually, as I said, he's a composite of the people of that generation and what they experienced in their time.
And one thing that's quite amusing about him is that he really can't see at all, but at night he can still drive a car.
Yes, he can see at night. Well, like he said, you know, there's a whole lot doctors can't explain, so who knows? You know, I move things around in fiction. I push the envelope in fiction because I think in terms of the history of society and the human race, we've seen everything, we've done everything, and anything is believable if you just write it the right way.
The thing I wondered while reading this novel, as I often wonder when I read novels, is good novels, is how does the author know what she knows? In other words, how do you know what the inside of some drug house where they make crystal meth, how do you know what that looks like and smells like? How do you know what this horrible guy who just got out of prison, how he thinks? I mean, is it your imagination? Is it research? Is it a combination?
Yes, it's a combination of all of those things. For the meth house, unfortunately, we do have those in our neighborhoods. And I described what this one looked like, sort of innocuous. One of the telltale signs, FYI, is garbage bags, because they throw a lot of their materials that they use for producing this. And they, you know, they're not exactly concerned about recycling. They have all the bags around the front yard and so on. And so it looks sort of abandoned, not taken care of. You'll see garbage around. And so that was part of my research. I was concerned about the accuracy about that. So part of my information comes from reading, you know, reading newspapers, doing internet research. And the other part is just going out there and checking out a couple of places. And then what you do is you make a composite so that it's not one specific place, but, you know, people can recognize it sort of, you know, as maybe that would be that location or maybe that would be that guy. And so, again, my criminal mind came from knowing some people like that. Unfortunately, when you run into characters, not that I knew them intimately, but that you know them by life experience, and you make a composite of different sociopath personalities, and you come out with this guy.
We're talking to Ana Castillo. Her latest novel is called The Guardians, and she'll be speaking tonight at Collected Works Bookstore at 7 o'clock. The novel is written, I mean, it's in English, but it's in Spanglish. There's a lot of Spanish words in there. And I've always wondered, since I've started learning Spanish, if anyone had made a study of Spanglish, of which words are said in which language. Have you analyzed this or just come naturally?
Well, I discovered this academic term of code switching somewhere in the mid-80s, about 10 years after I started writing the way that we speak in our communities in this country, but more and more so in other countries, and I dare say even Spain now has joined the joined the Spanglish community. When I've gone there, you know, as much as people resist English or have a love-hate relationship with this country, it's a business language, so it works its way all over the place. And as other communities move in there, you start to get this hybrid language, as I said in my book, a hybrid language for hybrid people. What I did in The Guardians was different from what I did in So Far From God. In So Far From God, people were very taken aback by the storyteller's use of Spanish. That Spanish was northern New Mexican Spanish. It was the Spanish of the Hispanos, goes back to the 16th century. They were, when the United States took over, they were abandoned by their friars, so they were sent back to Spain. And so they had to start making up Spanish words, in fact. In southern New Mexico, as I said, being closer to the border and being once closer to being Mexico, it's a different Spanish. What I did in The Guardians is I used Mexican Spanish, but what I'm giving the reader is a taste of the way it's used. If I really wrote the way, if it was a testimonial and I wrote the way that people are really speaking, you would get much bigger fragments of Spanish and much bigger fragments of English. So what I did is I wrote a book in English and I sprinkled it with Spanish words the way we like to do. We like to throw in, even though we know the English or the Spanish word, we just like to throw it in. We like to throw in nouns. You know, we like to turn English nouns into verbs, as is done in Spanish. So it's not at all what people assume, is that we are ignorant and we don't know English and we don't know Spanish and that we can't negotiate either language. We're actually developing a very complicated, very sophisticated hybrid language,
which has its own creativity and expressiveness.
And you do it very automatically. There is no judgment call on it, and it's not just border language. These are dynamics that take place all over the world. As anyone that's traveled any place that's not a pure community that hasn't had any migrants for the last 100 years, they would see that people have done that. Haiti has the patois, that's very wonderful. New Orleans had a similar patois because of their French and Spanish background. The Filipinos were once dominated by the Spanish, and they still have some Spanish in there. So I pay a close attention to this because of my own background with having grown up speaking that way.
Did you have a bilingual or somewhat bilingual reader in mind?
No, I didn't. I wrote the book in English. I know there's a lot of Spanish in there, and I know it seems to the real monolingual reader that maybe it's a book in English. But what I'm trying to do, and I hope I did it, is to give a very realistic view of the way people speak on the border. And by the way, this isn't just the Mexicans or the Hispanics, as they call themselves there, or even the Chicano, as Miguel, the character who's Chicano, he would probably do it intentionally, throw the Spanish words in there. But also the minority of Anglos that live there get familiarized with the language, and they feel comfortable with that because they hear it every day, I think.
Would you like to read a little section of the book?
I have a little section here that might work, that would give you a little bit of insight to what it looks like out there, or down there, I should say. And this is Regina's voice, and this is her giving a bit of the background of how she got to this fictional town called Cavuche. I stayed and worked here in Cavuche, first in the pecans and cotton. Because of Marion Jr., I got his army benefits. I could stay and not hide in the shadows no more. This meant no more picking, no more peeling chiles, and no more canning. Instead, I got up my courage 1 year and signed up for night classes at the community college. I did pretty good in my classes. I really liked being in a classroom. So later I got more courage and applied for a job as a teacher's aide in the middle school. That's how I bought my casita here on the mesa, where I can't see Los Franklins this morning, but I know they are out there playing with me like giants. They take the sun and play with people's eyes, changing colors. Like shapeshifters, they change the way they look, too. They let the devoted climb up along their spines to crown them with white crosses and flowers and mementos. They give themselves that way, those guardians between the two countries. I do not know what Rafa's talking about, his son becoming a gringo. These lands, this unmerciful desert, it belonged to us first, the Mexicans. Before that, it belonged to Los Apaches. Los Apaches were mean, too. They knew how to defend themselves. And they're still not too happy about losing everything, despite the casinos up by their land. Keep right on going, they'll tell tourists when they try to pull over on the highway that cuts across it during dry season.
Ana Castillo reading from The Guardians. There's also a variety of religions in the book. Besides the teenage, devout Catholic believer, there's an evangelical Christian. There's a priest who is somewhat cynical and has a mistress. There's Regina with her earthy way of life and her occasional dealings with the occult and things. And there's Miguel, who's a lifelong activist. And the interactions of all of these people and all of these strong beliefs is what drives the plot.
I've heard a lot of comments in the past 10 days of responding to some questions, early questions about the Guardians, about the spiritual undertones of the book. And again, like the other things, the other elements that come up in there, the different forms of marginalization, levels of marginalization, the different levels of violence, that they're not on on stage, so to speak. They're behind the scenes, the violence that people deal with and deal with every single day. The same way is how I dealt with the spirituality and the religious convictions that people in migrant communities deal with. They come from different walks of life. I think it's part of our human experience to search for something that gives us meaning to our lives, and I've just tried to show a little bit, again, just like the language, an example of some of that happens. And the Mexican community is predominantly Catholic, so we get that in the boy. But there's also been, for over 100 years, a great movement toward Protestantism that also takes place in northern New Mexico. So I just, as I said, as different as my characters are, we also have the non-believer Abuelo Milton, who's a philosopher, who's lived too long to believe in anything, but believes in life and believes in listening to his instinct. And, you know, that's another spiritual way to live, is to just trust your instincts, and maybe you'll survive, you know, 80 years. So.
And his instincts are very good.
And they're very good because, you know, he hasn't been around, you know, this long for nothing. And I feel that my characters also teach me a lot of things, and if anything, I learned that, I think, in the process of writing this, is to pay very close attention to your instincts.
The pacing of the book starts out slowly, and it's very skillfully done, because there's this sense that something is going to happen, and so there's always a little bit of tension, at least I felt, inside of the reader. But it's very slow, and I wondered if you were representing the pace of life as it is in southern New Mexico in the writing.
Well, indeed, there is that kind of taking your time about things, not like when you live in a big city like Chicago or New York, for example. And, you know, people just know that nothing is going to happen, you know, for a while. Doesn't matter if you call the sheriff. It doesn't matter if you make a report. They'll eventually come around. They probably won't do anything because they've heard the story before. They can't do anything. There's also the added, the tension comes from my character Regina, who's going through the change, in capital letters, through the change. And she says early on that she has anxiety. And the anxiety can be the change, because she's having these night sweats and these hot flashes. Or she said you could just pick up the newspaper and that can cause you anxiety. So some of the tension also...
Or her brother being missing.
Well, that's the thing, is that the reader feels this tension, because the big question, like in a mystery book, what happened to the brother? You know, is he dead? And there's plenty of hints that he's probably dead. We don't know that. We don't know for a long time what has happened to him. But she says, you know, anything could cause her anxiety, just like how to pay the bills at the end of the month can cause her anxiety. So she finds herself constantly in a state of, there's always that state of tension, but it's very played down, as I said, because that's how marginalized people have to negotiate. They have to figure out how they're going to pay their bills. So therefore, they just kind of go about things, you know, like it's part of life. And, you know, if the sheriff shows up, fine. And, you know, if you run into him at the grocery store, you can remind him that you called up. You know, that's the kind of way that poor people have to deal with social justice, I think.
The dedication of the book is to all working for a world without borders and to all who dare to cross them. We're just about out of time, but I want to thank you for your contribution to that world without borders in the form of this marvelous book, The Guardians. Ana Castillo will be tonight at 7 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore on West San Francisco, right across from the Lenzik Theater. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Robert Knott. Stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Robert Knott. He's associate editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday art supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. And he's here with us just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. Welcome, Robert.
Well, good morning. How is you?
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. That was a good interview with Anna Castillo.
Yeah, wonderful book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I read the whole thing yesterday.
And I have to plug Greg Smith's Q&A with her in today's Pasatiempo, although you did terrific with her. And if they happen to pick up Pasatiempo, there's a story there. Somebody's like shuffling chairs behind me, which is a little different from the shuffling of cards I did last night. Guess what movies are opening in the Cineplexes this weekend?
Tell us.
Well, there's Hot Rod, a most delightful comedy. It's really stupid. It's dumb. It's absolutely idiotic. You go to see it and you realize you can't stop laughing. At least I couldn't. So that's playing out at the Regal. The Bourne Ultimatum, if you're into Matt Damon, is that guy that, you know, nobody knows who he is, and he goes around beating up people. He's got, what do you call it when you forget your memory? Anonymous?
Amnesia?
No, you're thinking of insomnia. I know the difference between those. Amnesia. I think I forget something like that. And then I have to mention the cover story of the Pasatiempo, although the event does not kick off until Thursday night. The Center for Contemporary Arts is co-sponsoring the 7th Annual Native Cinema Showcase. And I saw a lot of the pictures in advance, and they're really a strong group of pictures. There's a terrific little documentary on Jacques Soto, the New York City ballet dancer who was born in Gallup. And there's a very funny TV series from Canada called Moose TV. So pay attention to those things at the CCA starting next Thursday. Better yet, pick up Pasatiempo and read the story.
Yay.
Now, what's happening this weekend, you ask? I'll tell you. First of all, as usual, there's about 42 gallery openings. So what do you go see and how do you choose what you're doing?
That is a great question. I think one of the ways you do it is you listen to what Robert Knott says.
You do that. Well, sometimes I pick by random. What are you doing? It's like, did you ever call people up at random to try to find somebody you knew and you lost their phone number? And you had a vague idea it was like 982 and you couldn't remember the next four digits?
No.
Well, it's very interesting. Chiaroscuro Contemporary Art has a group show on various media called A Story to Tell. It's a story of Native artists. That's opening tonight. Pardon me, today, they're on Camino del Monte Sol. The Dark Room. Ooh, scary to go in there. 901 West San Mateo Lane has close-up, a group show photography. It's a nice little combination studio and dark room. Reception 5 to 7 p.m. Gallery 822, which is conveniently located at 822 Canyon Road, have paintings by Kay Henderson. K, just a capital K with a period, not K, K-A-Y, although it could be. Reception 5 to 7. Karen Ruling Gallery has Abstract Gardens, paintings by Daniel Phil. Reception 5 to 7 p.m. She's on Canyon Road around 225. And Owen's Doing Fine Art downtown has landscape paintings by Ed Mell. It's a really interesting guy I interviewed a couple of years ago, wrote a piece on him. I haven't seen his recent work, but if you're downtown, 76 East San Francisco Street, you walk upstairs, landscape work by Ed Mell, reception 5 to 7. A couple other things, the Stevenson Gallery on Delgado Street has sculptures and masks by K.D. Fullerton. Reception 5 to 7:30. That's off of Canyon. So if you're walking up Canyon, you're tired of being on Canyon Road, but you want to see some more art, go down Delgado Street. It's turned into a regular cornucopia of creative chaos.
Speaking of cornucopia of creative chaos, Felines and Friends, that's more alliteration, is a cat rescue organization, and it's holding a pet adoption at Petco this Sunday, the 12th of August, from 12 to 3. This week's cat of the week is Nino, an affectionate bobtail silver tabby male kitty who would make a wonderful addition to any home. He's a cuddle bug. He's a cute little cuddle bug. It's Saturday at Petco, 12 to 3. For more information, 316-CAT-1.
Take me home. That reminds me of a funny joke. This guy...
Are you talking about yourself?
My neighbor comes over to my house and he says, I got some bad news for you. I said, what's that? He goes, when I was pulling out of my parking lot yesterday, I ran over your cat. I said, that's horrible. I'm about to cry. He says, don't worry. I'd like to make it up to you. I'd love to replace your cat. And I said, that's fine with me, but how are you at catching mice? He's going to replace my cat.
That reminds me of another joke I can't tell on the radio.
I like those jokes you tell. I have jokes like that too, and they're naughty, and you can't tell them in mixed company, but if all the men leave, you can tell them to the women. Wells Fargo Bank. Who would have thought they had art on the walls? But there's photographs by Bruce Fenney. Reception 4 to 6. They're on Washington Avenue. And finally, if you want to go see something in a rail yard, you're in the mood for some visual art, Santa Fe Clay has Botanical. Or is that Botanical?
Botanical.
Well, either way, it's sort of the flower of youth.
You say botanical, I say botanical.
You say satanical, I say satanical. Little devil. like to have some level. Let's call the whole thing on. Anyway, Santa Fe Clay has a botanical show, group show, reception 5 to 7. If you got an itch for photos of poison ivy, they probably got some over there. Now, this is interesting. I hope you can help me with this. The Santa Fe Desert Corral.
Yes, I'm with you so far.
They've been around for like 25 or 35 years. There's a story in today's Pasta Tiempo. I did read it. Craig Smith wrote it. I can't remember exactly, but it's like a big anniversary, which is like more than 4 years set. But anyway, they're doing Rachmaninoff. That's him. Rachmaninoff Vespers. Now, my question is, why is the guy whispering? Why can't he speak loud so we can all hear him? It's 8 o'clock at the Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi. You go over there, you're going to have to wear a hearing aid because the guy's whispering all night long. Anyway, you can get in. You got to call 988-2282.
I'll tell you something. Listening to the Desert Chorale sing in the cathedral is a transcendent experience.
Do you remember that Dean Martin song about singing in a cathedral?
No.
Oh, it goes something like this. How I love to hear a choir in the chapel in the moonlight. Ooh, that's the best song Dean Martin ever sang. It makes you cry.
Yeah, it makes me cry right now.
Well, that's good. It's probably the way I'm singing it. Leslie Satan. Speaking of Satan and satin, and this has nothing to do.
It's spelled satin, but she pronounces it Satan.
Right, and she's a devilish little lady. She's doing Set in Stones, which is a contemporary
Satin Stones?
That's interesting. It's a contemporary dance piece, which is, coincidentally, being done at the Center for Contemporary Arts. Where else would you go if you wanted?
No, it's at the Rail Yard.
I was about to get to that.
Oh.
It's being presented by the Center for Contemporary Arts, but they've decided to trick us all and go over to the Rail Yard so that we can't find them. And it's at the Rail Yard Performance Center at 8 o'clock tonight.
And tomorrow.
And 1611 Paseo de Peralta, right near, by the way, Santa Fe Clay and El Museo Cultural. I'll go over there and get some art in the Rail Yard before the trains start coming through.
Hey, the 23rd annual Take Back the Night March and Rally will be held on the plaza from 5 to 9 in the evening this Saturday. That's tomorrow, August 11th. Take Back the Night began as a nationwide movement in 1978 to protest the violence that women experienced while walking in public at night. And it's evolved in Santa Fe to include all people who do not feel safe from violence in their homes, their streets, and their communities. And especially in the light of recent sexual assaults here in Santa Fe and so on. There is this rally. If you want more information, you can call 988-1951.
That's an excellent thing to go see.
To go participate in.
Even better. You already mentioned Anna Castillo, but for those of you that just tuned in to hear my luminous voice, she's going to be signing copies of her book, The Guardians, at 7 p.m. at Collected Works tonight.
I love that book.
I haven't read it yet, but I have a copy.
It just came out. You have a copy? Read it. It's very good.
I got a lot of other things to read first. I got to look through some legal documentation. My lawyer says I have to read to get myself out of this situation. And then I got some other stuff that was written back in the 1700s by anonymous people. Kind of with a little bit of heat to it, so I'll get to that book next.
What he's talking about, nobody knows.
Bruce Dunlap is performing tonight. Where at? Gig. Where's that? 1808 2nd Street. Where's that? Off Cerrillos Road. How do you find out more? You got to go to the website, www.gigsantafe.com. It's at 8 o'clock. Doors open at 7. And the Santa Fe Music Fest, much heralded event this weekend. Out at the Downs, the old racetrack. I used to hang out there quite a bit until one of us went broke. I think it was me. They're having everything from Citizen Cope to Public Enemy to the Thelonious Groove, local bands, national bands, old bands, new bands, wedding bands, anything you want. Starts 1 o'clock today, runs through 11 o'clock tonight. Then it runs all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And by that I mean like roughly noon to 10. I don't know the exact hours. But you can see the story in today's Pasta Tiempo, or you can check out www.ticketmaster.com. Or they actually have a website. Go into Santa Fe Music Fest. I went on it yesterday. Meanwhile, if you feel like a different sort of art show on Saturday, Evo Gallery has Miguel Angel Rios, Aquí. It's a really interesting five-channel video installation. Reception's 5 to 7 on Saturday. Evo's on Guadalupe Street now, 554. And there's a really good story by Elizabeth Cooker Marin, today's Pasta. The guy, he likes to play tops. You know how, like, you spin tops? So, it's a video installation about tops, but there's, like, a metaphor for how, like, macho and violent they can be. But he's also going to be on the plaza Saturday playing tops. So that's pretty good. If you want to go down and play tops sometime around noon, go on down to the plaza Saturday and this guy will be there. But read the story in today's Pasta, even if you don't read anything else, and go see what's happening. Remember Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
No.
I was just thinking about them because I used to have a game where, like, you had to spin the tops and they used to fight each other. And I used to have Hurricane Harry And I always won, which had nothing to do with my talent. It was just the top was good. But then it made me think about that other game I had called Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And I always lost. And even with my brother, like if I would change colors, because red was always winning, I'd go over and do blue, I'd still lose. And then when we had fights in the bedroom ourselves, he also beat me up.
Breakfast with the Artists is a series of lectures and presentations that's held every Friday morning in August. Well, that's you've missed the one today, but for the rest of August. They're from 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning, and it's a program that provides an opportunity to meet some of the innovative Native American artists in New Mexico. Reservations are required, seating is limited, and you can call, this is the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, you can call 476-1250.
Excellent. One more art opening I gotta mention because I love the title. I know nothing about the art. Paintings by Carlos Ghislimberti, and it's called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That's like the best cowboy movie ever made. You ever see that?
You know, I've never seen it. I know the song, though.
It takes like 4 hours to watch, but it's terrific. Eli Wallach's in it, Clint Eastwood, they go out, and there's all this great music. Anyway, I don't think it has anything to do with that movie, but anyway, Sun Taos Gallery. The reception's 5 to 7 on Saturday. They're on Guadalupe Street. Meanwhile, the Bach Project is still going on across the street here. At Body, and that's two women dancing,
two Kate women Everly dancing.
And Julie Brett Adams, teaming up with cellist Timothy Marcel. He was in France, they were here in Santa Fe, they somehow collaborated over the internet, and now they got a show. 8 o'clock Saturday at the Body of Santa Fe. I will try to get to see that. Last night I went out to Rainbow Vision for the first time, to the Starlight Lounge, and I saw a show put together called, Over the Hill and Coming Out or something. It was about senior citizens talking about their stories of coming out years ago. It was really well put together. Randy Bennett directed it. Denise Cassell produced it. And they had these people write their own stories. It was really fascinating. I was really glad to see it. But it's closed. Last night was the last night.
Well, thanks for telling us.
Well, that's good. After all, it might be ahead of my time, but sometimes I'm behind the eight ball. The 5th annual Rag Rug Festival takes place on Saturday, 10 to 4, at the Stuart Udall Center. That's up on Museum Hill. And basically, it's a fiber art show and sale, and you can get some rag rugs. Now, there's film
and screen. Many other things, too.
There's music, film, demonstrations, no charge, 10 to 4, Saturday, 725 Camino Lejo Museum Hill. You can walk there, you can get the bus there, you can get somebody to drop you there if you're in town visiting. The rag rug. Now, what's the difference between rugs and rag rugs?
Rag rugs are actually woven from old rags, T-shirts and old clothing
and
things like that.
Stuff like that. You pick them off the floor and dust, do a little dusting later.
You might not want to, because they've turned them from rags into works of art.
You know I'd go from rags to works of art just to hang out with you.
Hey, Small Dog Rescue is having an adoption at Tropic of Capricorn from noon until 3 this coming Saturday. And I saw one of their, actually I saw two of their small dogs, and they are the cutest little things.
Oh, Raggy.
Good dogs.
I watched Scooby-Doo the other night. It was terrific.
I'm so glad to know that.
Salsa dancing, 8:30 p.m. lesson. When? Saturday. What time do you start dancing? 9:30.
Where?
Cloud Cliff Bakery, 1805 2nd Street, and the DJ is DJ Mambo.
Hey, is that the Mambo Room?
Hey, Mambo.
And that's tomorrow?
Cloud Cliff, yes, 8 o'clock, 8:30 Saturday. Get on down there. Phone number, 988-4011, and yeah, you got to pay to get in. We can't mention prices on KSFR, your community radio station at 90.7, and also simulcast at
101.1 FM. I didn't know Mambo Room was doing their thing tonight. If I were you,
Saturday.
Ladies and gentlemen, Saturday, I thought it was last week and next week, so I would call that number if I were you.
That's a good idea, because it's in
the
Posse
What's that number
tempo.
Again?
It's 988-4011, and it's true, once again, you and I talk about this a lot. Sometimes people send us misinformation in press releases, and we do our best to make sure it's accurate, but you can't do everything.
Hey, have you talked about the Paper Doll Militia?
No.
The Paper Doll Militia presents
paper cuts. What are they gonna
Rara Avis, a fantastical performance about love, death, the darkness of the human soul, and the light that can be found through community and play.
I'm nervous already.
Featuring Rainn Wilson, Colin McKeown, pronouncing it wrong, I'm sure, Sarah Holmes and Weston McDowell. These are performances tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at Wise Fool Studios. For more information, call... Good heavens, they don't give a phone number.
Yesterday, for reasons I can't explain, I started singing Winter Wonderland. Remember that song?
I do indeed.
Huh. Anyway, Saturday, Sunday, there's a ton of stuff to do. The Artisan's Flea Market is from 10 to 3 at the Santa Fe Brewing Company out on Fireplace Road. The 24th Annual Antique Ethnographic Art Show is at El Museo Cultural in the Rail Yard, 10 to 5. The Santa Fe Society of Artists juried outdoor art show is at Cathedral Park downtown, 213 Cathedral Place, right off the plaza, 10 to 5. And the 6th annual historic Indian and World Tribal Art Show is from 10 to 4 at the Rosemary Schellenberger Tennis Center. College of Santa Fe, so there's like 5 different art shows. You could go all over town, not to mention the Rug Festival, and that's just on Sunday. And next weekend's Indian Market, you can imagine that. Meanwhile, if you're interested in a little more music stuff, don't forget the last week of Outside In's free concerts, sponsored somewhat by the City of Santa Fe and other entities whose names I can't recall.
Santa Fe Bandstand, Music on the Plaza.
You got it. This week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, free, 6 o'clock. For example, Tuesday night, you got Jed and Kelly playing some country music at noon. Then at night, you got Terry Hendricks and Lloyd Maines teaming up with Julie Stewart and the Motor Kings. 6 o'clock, no charge, and just play out the season. Wednesday night is Folklorico playing with Buena Suerte. That's 6 o'clock on Wednesday. They do not have a noon show on Wednesday. They have a noon show on Tuesday and Thursday. It's free on the plaza. And finally, Thursday night on the plaza for the final show, they've got DJ Raven and doing flute music at noon, and Tamara Podemski and singer-songwriter John Trudell and Bad Dog doing spoken word at 6 o'clock Thursday. I think that's a preview to Indian Market. Last week to get down there, it's not tonight, but it is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6 o'clock, Tuesday, Thursday, noon at the Plaza. It's a great concert.
And for those who want to get out of town a little bit, every weekend there are special activities and ranger programs at Bandelier National Monument. There's cultural awareness programs, evening campfire programs, and night walks. For more information, you can go to... nps.gov/band for Bandelier, or you can probably easier call 672-3861.
Wouldn't it be weird if they took you on like a dark walk at night and you went out there in the middle of nowhere and all of a sudden all the stars went out in the sky and then the ranger that was running that walk said, find your way back, and ran and left you. And it turns out you weren't outdoors at all, that you were in a huge, like, amphitheater, and they had hooked up.
You're turning bright red, Robert,
that's
but
hilarious.
I'm not sure why.
Because it's a funny idea. I just thought of it.
It's probably the subliminal memory of a movie you saw in Creature Features when you were 7.
I come up with these lame-brained ideas. I always think they're going to make me money. I end up broke, and the next thing you know, I'm down there with a dog track trying to play to hounds or something. Plate. If you're into opera.
Yes.
The story of a frog and a guy that falls for her. 8:30.
Or pretends to.
Well, he's trying to scale the heights. Anyway, it's at 8:30 at the opera certain nights. I know for one thing it's Thursday night. Last couple of weeks of the opera coming up. You want to go up there?
It's a drag show because the female frog is played by a tenor and sung by a tenor, a male.
Well, I used to date a tenor. She wasn't so hot after all. Everybody thinks Bo Derek is a... 986-5900, call the opera. Find out what's happening up there. I haven't been up there yet to hear their arias and other stuff. I've been working a lot, but I do... I think a lot of them, and I'll try to catch Plate, maybe one of those other shows about that Cossy Fan Tutti Dame. Robert Mirabal's playing 7 o'clock Thursday night, Milner Plaza, Museum Hill. Gotta pay. Steel Pulse is teaming up with Ozo Motley.
That should be a rockin' show.
Paolo Soleri, 7 o'clock Thursday night. Everybody's doing the show Thursday night. And Jack and Jill, the theater show that opened at the Santa Fe Performing Arts last night, which I could not go see, but I am going to go see it, is running through the weekend. Call over there. I think there are 984-1370, I'm pretty sure, is the box office number at the Armory for the Arts. It's an original production. Pardon me, it's a play was written a few years ago, but it's being done by the new Flash in the Pan Productions, Brent Harvey directing, the Armory for the Arts, 1050 Old Santa Fe Trail. What time is it?
8:54.
Oh, we're doing great. We're doing great. Let's see here. If you want to go out of town, you can always go to Abiquiu, visit the Ghost Ranch Piedra Lumbre Education Visitor Center, see what's happening up at Ghost Ranch. I don't know if there's any ghosts there, but O'Keefe used to hang around there. The Maya Art Cafe is up there. They're doing portraits by Gerald Frank. They're on US 84 and New Mexico 554. If you want to go down to Albuquerque, you got a lot of choices, including the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center on 12th Street. They're doing a show called Take a Bite Out of This from Corn to Commodity. It's a multi-sensory show, looking at the way that food and water help shape indigenous communities, and I'm curious what role corn plays in that. They're on 12th Street Northwest down in Albuquerque.
I'll give you a hint, it plays a big role.
Well, you can lend me an ear sometime and tell me all about it. VSA North 4th Arts Center on 4th Street has Image and Identity, New Works from Native Youth. That's photographers by young photographers. Photography. What do you call it when it's photographs?
Photography?
That's it, by young
photographers?
People that take pictures involved in the Run to the Sun photo project. All right, so I get a little tongue twisted. What do you want? At least I know how to emasculate myself when I'm speaking.
You do?
Sure, all the time. It's none of your business,
right? Robert Knott, speaking of the arts, hey, you know what we don't always mention is the fact that we've got incredible movies in Santa Fe all the time. The Santa Fe Film Center. I know, but I mean the Santa Fe Film Center, which is the extension of the Santa Fe Film Festival. We have the Screen on the campus of the College of Santa Fe, which is an extraordinary place to watch movies, and the CCA Cinematheque. What are you laughing at me for?
Well, because you're right, absolutely. Over at the Screen is Lady Chatterley. It's a very naughty story, which I happen to see. Now, I don't often go to the movies, but this one interested me because it's got period clothes and people get out of them, and that's always kind of an interest. It's a lot more fun. She's walking through the woods. She sees this guy. He's taking a bath from the waist up. She thinks that's pretty hot, and the next thing you know, having a little rotisserie together, and there's all sorts of problems. It's based on some naughty novel by some guy written 100 years ago. Anyway, there's a review of it by Jonathan Richards. He's sort of the erudite film reviewer at the Pasa Tiempo. He also wrote a piece speaking of film about those two film directors that just kicked off, Antonioni and Bergman. And I'm glad I can pronounce their names, because that other guy's name I can never pronounce, the one Jean-Luc
Godard.
That's it. You don't pronounce the D at the end?
That's correct.
How come?
Because it's French.
Those guys... I went out with one of those girls when she tried to use her tongue when she was kissing me. If you go out to Los Alamos, which is north of here, the Art Center at Fuller Large has New Mexico, Land of Enchantment. That's an original title. Group show, they're on Central Avenue. I don't know anything about the art, but the title is extraneous. Meanwhile, the Mesa Public Library up there has a number of shows, including a group show of work by Los Alamos County employees and their families. The Gordon Summer Concert Series takes place in Los Alamos. South by Southwest is playing up tonight at 7 o'clock. Chuck Pyle's playing at 11 a.m. on Saturday. They also have concerts all day long Saturday, and it's up at Ashley Pond, which is off Central at 20th. They used to go swimming in Ashley Pond, but I don't think they do anymore. I wouldn't mind seeing Ashley take a dip there. Anyway, in Madrid, the Johnsons of Madrid Galleries has shows. They've also got the melodrama going on, the Pied Piper. They took that old story about the guy that's playing a flute and gets all the mice out of town. And then the townspeople, the dirty rats, double-cross him. They won't pay the bill. So he goes back and he uses his flute to get the kids out of town. Anyway, they turned it into some sort of melodrama. It's playing at 3 o'clock Saturday and Sunday at the Engine House Theater. Meanwhile, the Santa Fe melodrama opens in another week. That should be interesting. I'll tell you more about that when we get to it. Say, what time is it?
8:57 and a half.
Well, that was pretty good.
I think we did great. And by the way,
yes.
When we talk about the opera, there is next week the Santa Fe Opera has a different opera every night, and so Monday through Friday the last 2 weeks of the season, and I'm going to be playing, running the shows that we did with Desiree Mays about the opera, corresponding to the one that's playing that night, every day next week.
Going to be running,
so in other words,
people.
Monday we're going to be playing the show about Così fan tutte, Tuesday La Bohème, Wednesday Tea of Mirror of Soul, Thursday Platé, and Friday Daphne.
That's great. I love that Così fan tutte. Remember that Elvis Presley song?
Which means that you and I won't be here on Friday together next week. But we will the following week.
Oh, so I get a day off.
You get a day off.
I'm delighted, not to mention...
sad.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. Robert Knott is the associate editor of the Pasa Tiempo, which is the Friday art supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he's here with us just about every Friday speaking of the arts, and it's wonderful to have you here, and
it's
very nice to each other today.
We're always nice. It's the milk of human kindness, maybe sprinkled with a little chocolate.
Milk.
Which always makes things a little more interesting.
That's the name of my dog.
Milk and honey.
KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today.
Thank you, Laura.
Stay tuned, Laurel. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team.
And just a shorthand version.
And after that, jazz a la carta. Well, I'm sorry.
It's
some people. Some people call me Mary. Which I don't like.
No, you're Mary Charlotte.
That's right.
Mary Charlotte.
Somebody wrote to me yesterday and said, do you have a last name? Sort of like what they used to ask Prince Charles.
Well, the last name they used on me wasn't something we could put on the air.
Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, Robert Knott, it's lovely to have you. We won't see you next week, but we'll see you the week after.
People don't see me. We're on the radio.
We'll hear you next week. I'll see you next week.
It's all auditory.
Hasta la vista.
Yeah, and goodbye, too.
Have a good weekend.
Yeah.
Ciao.